In this episode of She Talks Tech, we hear from Susie McAlpine, Leadership Development Specialist and author of the best-selling book, Beyond Burnout, How to Spot It, Stop It and Stamp It Out. Drawing on her first-hand experience, research and concepts from the book, Susie explains what burnout is, who is most at risk and how to spot the main warning signs and symptoms. She also shares four great strategies to address burnout, whether as an individual, leader, or as part of an organisation.
My name is Susie McAlpine. I am a leadership coach from New Zealand, and I've written a best-selling book called Beyond Burnout, How to Spot It, Stop It, and Stamp It Out. And I'm going to take some of the key concepts from that book today and tell you a little bit about what exactly is burnout, who's most likely to suffer from it, what are the causes of burnout, the symptoms, or what I call the three red flags that we need to be aware of in ourselves and our colleagues, and perhaps most importantly, what are the four strategies that we can apply at an organisational level, a leadership level, and an individual level to help reduce its effects in our workplaces. So let's get started. What better place to start with a definition? So what exactly is burnout? Well, it's a state of emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion caused by excessive and prolonged stress related to your professional life. It's become part of our workplace vernacular. It's very common. We say, oh my gosh, I'm so burnt out from that week from hell. When true burnout is far more malevolent, it's more insidious, and it can be quite difficult to spot. So perhaps a good place to start is, what is burnout? What isn't burnout? Well, it's not stress in and of itself. In fact, a certain amount of stress is not only good for our well-being, it's really good for our performance. It's when that stress becomes extreme, ongoing, what I call baked into the role, that's when you're more likely to suffer from burnout. It's not even tired after a period of intense activity. We can have projects which mean that we have to dig deep and that we work a lot harder and a lot longer hours than we normally do, and high amounts of stress. And then it subsides. We take a break. Maybe we have a holiday and then we come back refreshed. Our tank fills up and we're ready to carry on. Burnout happens when you are feeling that chronic exhaustion most or all of the time. It's when that bounce back factor goes, when the batteries won't recharge, and when you really can't get that energy back after that experience. One of the things to look out for is that when you don't have burnout, as I mentioned before, you might have a holiday or a break and you recharge your batteries. Burnout is more likely to be about when you're exhausted after you've had your break. That break or that holiday doesn't do its trick. You come back to work just as tired and as exhausted as you were before the break. It's not caused by factors outside of work. According to the experts and the researchers, you can feel pretty stressed out about your personal life, your relationships. That sucks, but that's not burnout according to the research. So it's very much related to your professional life. Having said that, my perspective, particularly in this COVID-fueled world, is that the boundaries between home and work get pretty blurred pretty quickly. And so I think we need to take a holistic approach to burnout. If there are certainly some, you know, really stressful things that are going on in your personal life, that's absolutely going to have an impact on your work life. Burnout isn't depression, but it can look like depression. So one of the world's earliest researchers to coin burnout, a German-born American psychologist, Freudenberger, said that burnout looks like depression. And so some of the symptoms of burnout can be very similar to depression. Also, if burnout is left unchecked, if it becomes extreme, in some cases it can lead to depression. But they are distinct and robust constructs in themselves. Whereas depression can have a number of factors that cause the depression, when it comes to burnout, it's very much to do with your professional and your work life. The other thing that's quite tricky about burnout is that it doesn't happen overnight. You don't wake up one morning on fire and flow, really highly engaged, and then the very next day you're burnt out. It's a bit like a candle burning down. It happens slowly over time. And so it can be quite tricky to pick. It's a gradual process. So the next question you might think is, well, who's most at risk? Well, anybody can experience burnout, regardless of your title, your hierarchy in an organization, or even your industry. one of the things that is really important to note, which I talk about in my book and through the research, is that the biggest lever as to whether people are going to experience burnout or not has to do with the environment, the organizational factors, far more than individual tendencies. Having said that, there are certain industries or professions which feature in the burnout statistics and not in a good way. For example, the legal profession, teachers, the healthcare sector, no surprises at the moment, and even human services shown through research to put you at higher risk. There are some very, very small differences. For example, if you're a type A personality, if you have perfectionistic tendencies, that puts you slightly higher at risk. But I think what we need to do is stop treating burnout as an individual problem and start looking at it as an organizational problem. Because if we treat it as an individual problem, it's a bit like treating the sick fish when it's the water that is contaminated. We need to really look at the ecosystem in which the individual is operating, the culture, the leadership practices of an organization, if we really want to stamp it out. That's not to say that as individuals, if you don't have a leadership role, that you can't do some very important things to try and protect yourself from burnout. But I think we're putting far too much onus onto the individual and not enough on the organisational practices and the leadership practices within organisations. The other thing that I think is really important to look at is to get better at recognising the symptoms of burnout before we become burnt toast, as it is. So there are three red flags or symptoms which Christina Maslach and Michael Leiter, who are arguably the world's experts on burnout, have coined. And these have also been backed up with subsequent research. The first symptom is probably the one that we think about, and that is chronic exhaustion. This is when you're feeling completely fatigued, the batteries won't recharge, the holiday doesn't do its job. It's where you feel exhausted, depleted, and deflated a lot of the time, most of the time, or all of the time. The second red flag for us to look out for is an increased level of cynicism and/or depersonalization. So this is when things that didn't used to get under your skin suddenly do. You may have increased irritability, or you find that perhaps where you used to be a glass half full, it's replaced by this very cynical attitude towards your work. And you may find yourself, if you're experiencing that depersonalization, a sort of a distancing from your co-workers, your customers, if you're in the healthcare sector, your patients, a sort of a withdrawal from things that you normally lean into. And the third red flag or symptom to look out for in burnout is reduced professional efficacy. One of the people that I interviewed for the book said it's a bit like running a marathon in molasses. You're digging deeper, you're working harder, but you just don't feel like you're able to get ahead or do the things that you normally could do with ease. So things that tasks, activities, or aspects of your job that you used to be able to find quite easy suddenly take Herculean effort. And this is not surprising because burnout has not only physical effects, it has mental, cognitive, and emotional effects on the person who is suffering. So just to be aware of, chronic exhaustion, increased cynicism and/or depersonalization, and reduced professional efficacy. In my book, I go into a lot more detail about these signs and some checklists, which can give you some ideas. I think if we can get better at recognizing those symptoms early on, we're more likely to address it. So what are the four strategies, or what are some things that we can do to reduce burnout in our organizations? And before I dive into that, I think it's really important to outline why this is really important. So burnout is on the rise, and that's before COVID hit. And in 2019, the World Health Organization said that it's costing over $300 million a year globally. It's not only causing us issues in terms of personal costs, it's also causing lots of issues and costs for the organization and the society that we are in. So in the book, I came up with four strategies, and these strategies can be applied at an organizational level, a leadership level, and at an individual level. They are recognize, destigmatize, socialize, and organize. So as I mentioned, it's really important we get better at recognizing burnout before it becomes really extreme. And Brené Brown said, shame never drives positive behavior. And I think that's really important. What can you do to upskill and educate yourself on what are the signs in yourself, but also your colleagues? Particularly if you're in a leadership role, I think that this is something that you need to really focus on. And what are some of the things at an organizational level that we can do to make people to be more aware? And that might be looking at your policies, your processes, even the way that your induction could be opportunities for that. I think one of the other things that we can do is start to talk more openly about burnout and other mental distress in our workplaces. So this might look as simple as having conversations in one-on-ones or in team meetings. You may start the meeting by going, on a scale of 1 to 10, how is everybody's wellness today? So start to make it normal to have conversations around mental well-being within your organisation. You know, bring your wellness conversations into part of your workplace vernacular. Certainly, if you do start to wonder if you recognize some of those symptoms in yourself, do seek medical professional help. Do reach out. If ideally that will be your direct manager, but if you don't have that trusting relationship with your manager, see if there are other people within your organization, perhaps a mentor, perhaps HR, you know, someone within the organization who you can speak up to and say, hey, it's really important and I think I'm struggling. Which brings me to the next strategy, which is destigmatize. I think that like a lot of mental distress in the workplace, people are too afraid to put their hand up and say that they are feeling overwhelmed. And I think we need to really change that conversation. The research shows that perhaps it is that some of the most high performing and most engaged employees are most at risk. So I think we need to get rid of this myth that if you suffer from burnout, somehow you are mentally weak. You know, just take a teaspoon of cement and harden up, because the research shows us unequivocally that that is not the case. So what are some ways that we can destigmatize burnout? Well, probably this is one where I think leaders really have to step into the ring. A lot of leaders underestimate the shadow they cast. When they whisper, it comes out like a shout. And so if leaders can take the courage to be vulnerable and share some of their own experiences, if they've experienced burnout, or even how they've managed stress and be open about that, I think that's going to send a message to many others that it's okay for others to do so. Stigma stops people from getting help, and we can't address this issue if it remains hidden. One of the studies that I used in the book showed that people were able to be open about stress were far less likely to show signs of burnout. If we can start to make it safe for people to speak up, this is something that's really important. The third strategy is socialize. So as humans, we are hardwired to connect. And one of the causes of burnout is a sense of isolation from others. What we can do is start to be more purposeful about social connection at work. This is about having how are we going conversations as well as what are we doing conversations. So for example, in your one-on-ones, let's say you have a one-on-one with your direct report or your direct manager, start to bring in some how are we going conversations or questions such as, you know, what are your highlights and lowlights from the last month? What are you finding challenging at the moment and how can I support you? What do I need to keep doing or stop doing or start doing in order to have a better working relationship with you? The other thing that I would say is be like Gabby Reese, the professional volleyballer. She has this thing where she says, go first. And so if you see a colleague who you sense may be on the outer, reach out to them. If you are sensing that someone may be struggling, a colleague of yours, don't leave them hanging. Something as simple as, how are you? Followed by active listening is really, really powerful in our organizations to bring that social connection. One of the things that we've noticed in the research is that those organizations which have coaching cultures and feedback cultures are far less likely to experience burnout. And one of the other things that I think we can do is show that we genuinely care. In the research, it shows that if we believe that our direct manager genuinely cares about us, if we feel that our organization values us and our contribution, we're far less likely to experience burnout. And so something as simple as saying, I really appreciate what you did last week when you insert whatever it was, because it meant that we had this amazing meeting. So just showing genuine valuing feedback to our colleagues, and particularly if you're a leader, to your direct reports, something as simple as this can be really important. And then finally, we need to get better at organizing work. What we're talking about here is not trying to do too much without the resources to do it. This seems pretty simple and common, but as we know, common sense isn't that common. I was working with a leadership team not so long ago, and they said, here are our 15 priorities for the organization. And I said to them, that makes an oxymoron of the word. There's a really great book called Essentialism by Greg McKeown, if you want to get better at knowing how to do that. The other thing we can do, which is shown to reduce burnout, is to involve each other or involve people in the how and the why of their work, not just the what. What can you do if you, particularly if you're a leader, to involve people in how they carry out their work? So the more control that we have on things like decisions that affect us, the nuts and bolts of how we carry out our work. So increased flexibility on the what and the how will also reduce. What can you do to get better at prioritizing? And this can be at an individual level, a leadership and an organizational level. You know, I love the question, what can we ditch, delay, or delegate? Make a to-don't list instead of a to-do list. And so start to get very, very clear on what is really, really important, and be really wary of the kind of interesting, kind of important things. It's simple, but it's hard. Certainly at an individual level, if you can really up your time management skills, that's really going to help. And learn how to negotiate upwards and communicate on your priorities. You've got a lot less control when you are further down the hierarchical ladder, but certainly you can still have some really good conversations with your direct manager about, well, look, here are my five priorities. Here's another task that's come in. Where does that fit in terms of the priorities? And how can we sort of juggle or be aware of the priorities or the things that I've already got on my plate? So more two-way conversations around priorities and tasks will certainly help us. The final thing around organized strategy is learning to recognize your strengths and find ways to work more from your strengths. What the research shows is that if we can work more from our strengths, burnout reduces. That is one thing that you can do. And there's lots of different ways that you can identify your strengths. There's lots of online things. I love Red Bull Wing Finder is a really good free online assessment. But also ask others, ask your colleagues, ask your direct manager, ask your direct reports. What do you see as my strengths? Which are the things that I'm really good at and the things that I enjoy doing? So there you have it, the four strategies: recognize, destigmatize, socialize, and organize. And if, of course, you want to know more, check out my book, Beyond Burnout: How to Spot It, Stop It, and Stamp It Out.
Susie, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about Susie, you can connect with her on LinkedIn, or you can purchase her book via Amazon. Please do subscribe and rate our podcast and give it that all-important 5-star review. Keep listening every Wednesday morning for a new episode of She Talks Tech.